This is episode number 119 of Library of the Living Dead. You are welcome here. Welcome, good librarians, to episode number 119 of Library of the Living Dead. You just heard Zombie, and after these few intro comments, we'll have a letter by Goat Boy, and then we get a song by Ozzy Osbourne called Zombie Stomp. We get Tonya Brown's Lucky Stiff, Chapter 2, Part 1, and then a song by John Fogerty called Eye of the Zombie. Tony Schaub gives us Gore Score. It's on Planet Terror. MXPX then gives us Christmas Night of the Living Dead. Then we get a story by Osmosis 7 called Kinda Like Frying the Hulk. Zombies Coming to Eat My Brain by the Dishwashers is next. And then we get The Zombies Survival Guide by Cal Miller, Part 1. There's a song, Zombie Shuffle, by the Atomic Regulators, and then a few out comments, and then Rock and Roll Zombie by Ralph Rebel. So, strap it on, tighten it up, turn that volume way up, and let's get ready for episode number 119 of Library of the Living Dead. Hey ho, let's go! Give me some ammo for my shotgun. I ain't got no time to last very long. Oh, the lonely days are here. I'll be staying at home. My baby, she wrote me a letter. I don't care how many of those things I gotta kill. I just can't leave my home again. Oh, the lonely days are here. I'll be staying home. My baby, she wrote me a letter. She wrote me a letter. Said it was a letter from the dead. Listen, people, don't forget my words, my baby's undead. Anyway, give me some paper and a pencil. I've still got all those things to kill. Oh, the lonely days are here. I've been staying at home. My baby, she wrote me a letter. Baby done wrote me a letter. My baby 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 wrote me a letter.
My baby wrote me a letter.
My baby wrote me a letter. My baby wrote me a letter. It was a letter from the dead. My baby wrote me a letter from the dead. My baby wrote me a letter. My baby wrote me a letter from the dead. From the dead. Welcome to the Black Empties, Letters from the Dead. A poet I had longed to be. My soul spoke out in verse and rhyme, but never found itself a page. So much to do, so little time. I yearned to capture and to tame the verse that sang within my heart, to tap that inner melodic seam, my words of wisdom to impart. But now it seems the time is here. No excuses do I have or need. For now the dead have all returned, and on my flesh they wish to feed. The carrion stench that is their greeting, the moaning walls that fill the air, are heralds of a dead tomorrow, their affirmation of despair. I sit here safe within my fortress, with food and drink enough to last. I know the dead will not gain ingress, and I shall force on them a fast. The screaming just goes on forever. Those poor souls who never know a grave will swell the ranks of this dead army, and not one of them can I save. And so I sit here at my table, with time enough to pen this verse, to chronicle the desolation. Somehow I think my fate is worse. Library of the Living Dead is now proud to present Tonya Brown's Lucky Stiff, Chapter 2, Part 1.
Lucky Stiff, Chapter 2. The successful claim, you can sleep when you're dead. They were wrong. After she spent half the night riding my eternal erection, the madam fell into a deep sleep, while I was left wide awake. Filled with a nervous energy, I didn't know what to do with myself. Thinking back on it, I could have left. I could have wandered off into the night to seek my own fortune, to shape my own afterlife. I could have, but I didn't. On some level, I felt tied to the madam. I suppose I felt indebted to her for raising me, not to mention the fact that the death of my body hadn't killed my hunger for learning. And needless to say, physics no longer made it into my top 10 study topics. And I decided against rifling through her things for answers to my many questions. I was still plenty naive, but I knew enough to resist the temptation to snoop around the home of a woman who was powerful enough to bring a guy back from the dead. Instead, I settled for getting a good look at myself. My body was blotchy, my torso splotched with weird, uneven bruising, and I was curious to see how the old mug had held up. I found a full-length mirror hanging in the main hall, drew a deep breath in preparation, then chanced a glance. I was surprised that I didn't look half as dead as I was supposed to be. Staring back from the glass was this naked ginger kid, all pale and mottled, with a blue tint to his mouth, his tongue, and his raging hard-on. My eyes were an odd yellow. Even the irises, which used to be green, now sported a dull sheen of amber. I didn't look dead so much as sickly. Most importantly, I looked and felt very much alive. With nothing better to do, I used the next few hours to mull over the fact that I was dead, or rather undead, as the madam labeled me. Now, what did that mean? I wasn't sure how different I was from the living. I felt like a man reborn, and maybe I was. I wasn't concerned about school or my future anymore. I wasn't bothered by what tomorrows might bring. I just didn't care. I thought about my family for a moment, but even their memory couldn't raise more than a twinge of sympathy from me. No longer did I have to work so hard to please my mother, or wonder if I was impressing Dad. I was free from all that, beyond it, above it. To top that off, all of my inhibitions seemed to have fled with my life. Every doubt, every worry, every niggling reservation, hesitation, or vacillation that had ever troubled me was gone, erased. I was almost numb with confidence. This freedom from fear forced me to take further stock of my situation. How else did I differ now that I was no longer alive? I could still breathe, though I wasn't sure I needed to. I could see, though my eyes were as dry as bone. I could hear, nothing had changed there. I could taste, after licking my ebony goddess from head to toe, I was sure of that. And that's when it hit me. I couldn't smell. I sniffed the air, drawing deep breaths until my nose ached from the effort. In a house that was sure to reek of exotic herbs and spices, I couldn't pick up a single scent. Nothing. My sense of touch, however, was heightened. I felt every little ripple of pleasure, of pain, with acute awareness. The texture of the seat registered a fine hairline weave against my bare rump. My feet picked out the uneven knots in the boards that made up the floor beneath the shag carpet. Like a tactile echo, I could still feel the madam under my hands, her sweet flesh in my palms, her body temperature rising around my cock as she crested through each orgasm. A smile crept to my lips as I replayed our 3-hour romp in my mind. My first time. I always had a sneaking suspicion that I would have to see this side of the grave before a woman would want to make out with me for any length of time, much less fuck me like an animal for 3 solid hours. I fisted my cock as I reminisced about her midnight delight of a body, only to stop when I remembered it was a wasted effort. She was right about one thing. I couldn't come. 3 hours of slam, bam, thank you, ma'am, and not once did I pop my cork. But she sure did. Each time she climaxed, I wallowed in her majesty like a little piggy in the cool mud on a hot summer's day. Now, I know it sounds sycophantic, but Most of the time, it never occurred to me that I should even get a turn to come. I was just that pleased each and every time she did. And there was something else about it, too. Every time she came, it satisfied more than just my ego. It reassured me, made me whole, or put me at peace. I don't know how to explain it. I just knew that I not only wanted to make her climax again, I felt like I needed to, like I had to. After a few hours, I grew tired of contemplating my situation and opted to entertain myself with my old standby, reading. The madam had a vast collection of books, the most eclectic array I'd ever seen in one place. The choices ranged from hardcore science fiction to lighthearted romance to Wild West dime store novels. Magazines from every corner of the globe lay stuffed between stacks of books, the contents of which covered every subject from health to beauty to religion to skepticism. There was even one shelf full of both books and magazines that featured what my mother would affectionately have called smut. Yet, one wall in particular held my interest over the others. The entire wall comprised one wide bookcase crammed with manuscripts dedicated to the occult. I'd never thought much about the subject of the supernatural before all this, but given the circumstances, I decided it was high time I did. Buck-ass naked, I snuggled down in the oversized lounger with an equally oversized book entitled El Libro de los Muertos. I had no idea what that meant, but it looked fascinating. I don't know how long I sat like that, transfixed by the book, in the parlor of my madam's home. You'll have to forgive me for using the antiquated term, but ever since I came back from the dead, I'm not quite comfortable thinking of it as a living room. A living room sounds so exclusionary, whereas a parlor welcomes everyone. "That book should answer a lot of questions," Madame Sangrail said from the doorway. "Is the book of the dead?" The sight of her made me forget to breathe for longer than it would have been healthy if I had still needed the air. Framed by the soft glow of the early morning sun, her body was an hourglass silhouette of dark perfection. She stepped into the parlor, naked as I was. Her fresh face beauty was even more stunning than the night before. The woman may have seen several centuries, but the years hadn't touched that body. I made a mental note to ask her what her secret was, though I doubted she would reveal it. "What time is it?" I asked. 7 in the morning," she said. "Wow, I was up all night," she nodded. "I guess I just couldn't sleep," I said. "And you won't," she informed me. "You don't need sleep. Not anymore." "Oh." As I said, I had a lot to learn about being dead. "Well, that's handy, I guess." "You been sitting there like that all night?" "Yeah. Why?" "I didn't know what else to do. You fell asleep, so I thought I should wait." She pulled a robe from the back of the couch, slipping it around her as she sat on the ottoman across from me. "What were you waiting on?" "I don't know," I said. "For you to tell me what to do now, I guess." Looking away from me, she sighed. "What is it?" I asked. "I don't know what to do with you," she said. I reached forward to caress her inner thigh. "I know what you can do with me." She smacked my hand away. "Not now, boy. Sangrail's trying to think." I obeyed and sat back. A worried look flitted across her face, leaving behind a tired shadow, a hint of her true age. Even though I scarcely knew the woman, it pained me to see her hurt. "This ain't easy," she said. "This ain't how it's supposed to work." How does it usually work?" I asked. "Usually, I get the worst kinds in here. Men and women who done all kinds of bad. I get paid big to bring 'em back, so they share some last secret or whatever. And after that, the folks who dragged 'em up here go away, and I'm left with a walking corpse to do my bidding." I trailed my fingers across her thigh again. "I want to do your bidding. I'm yours to command." "Not like that. I mean, pulling weeds, or doing my laundry, or serving as a sacrifice so I can quiet that 7th-level demon I got tied up in the backyard."
"I see."
I sat back, drumming my fingers on the arm of the chair. My lust-fueled existence as an undead sex slave to a drop-dead, gorgeous, tantric sorceress vanished in a puff of self-pity. Yet, I suppose I still owed her. I cleared my throat before I weighed in on it. Not exactly what I had in mind, but I'd be glad to help out. Maybe not with the demon thing, though, if that's okay. She furrowed her brow, her dark coffee eyes looking to the ceiling as if seeking help from above. You see how hard you're making this on me. You're supposed to be a bad boy, but you're not. You're nice, Peter. You're a nice boy, and I ain't never raised no one nice. Now I don't know what to do about it.
Well, but what do you want to do with me?
I don't know. Look at you. You were just a kid. A nice, good kid. You were going to make a fine husband for some lucky lady one day, and that got ripped from you most unfairly.
She stared at me, her eyes wide with anger and frustration. The world ain't a fair place, Peter. It ain't fair at all. Someone so good should have never got mixed up with me.
To be honest, I said, I haven't always been like this. I never put anyone else first in my life. I was always obsessed with school and being the perfect student and the perfect son. But your magic saved me. I got a second shot at life, and I have you to thank.
Don't be so quick to thank me. Any good you do is on you, Peter. My kind of magic don't turn people nice.
Well, maybe, I said, but your magic brought it out in me. I'm a new man because of you.
Don't get it, boy! She shouted.
I fell quiet. This won't last, she said, softer this time. You won't stay like this, she waved her hand at me.
Like this? I patted my naked body a few places, trying to work out the meaning of her words.
You're a zombie now. She looked away as ashamed by the words. Do you even know what that means?
I shook my head. Aside from Hollywood theatrics, I was clueless. And as it turned out, Hollywood theatrics weren't far from right.
First of all, she said, you ain't nothing but walking meat now. Walking rotten meat. My eyes widened. You mean you're gonna set to decaying, and soon.
The image of my body crumbling, falling apart like so much wet sand, threatened to crush my mind with madness.
I don't want to rot! That ain't the half of it. Ain't the half of it? For heaven's sake, what could possibly be worse than full-on cognizant decomposition?
Returning her dark eyes to me, she took on a deep, brooding look that told me I would regret asking.
Peter, you're gonna get a powerful hunger. A hunger so raw, so all-consuming, that no normal fare will ever touch it. You can eat and eat and eat, but you're never going to get your fill. Only one thing will satisfy this hunger, and I think you know what I'm talking about.
I did. Swallowing hard, I decided to ask anyways.
Human flesh? The madam nodded. I'm surprised your belly ain't rumbling right now.
I rubbed my stomach, but it kept silent. As did I. I didn't want to know how she fed her previous creations.
I'm sorry, she said. For the first time in my life, I'm really sorry. I done so many bad things to so many people, but I'll always regret bringing you back the most.
We sat in silence for a little while, her shaking her shaggy head at me staring at her, willing her to offer me some guidance. What are you going to do with me? I finally asked, though I had an uncomfortable suspicion. She looked away again and said, you got to go.
Where?
Back from where you came. I closed my eyes on the hideous thought. I didn't want to go back. Not now. Not after I had so much more to live for. And I wasn't just thinking about sex, though admittedly that was part of it. The Batom brought me back with a thirst for life, for love, for everything I'd once deemed a waste of time. I didn't want to die. I wanted to live.
I don't want to go, I said. I want to stay. With you.
You got it, Peter. I don't think I can stomach watching you fall apart at the seams, boy. Not after you were so good to me.
Too good.
I ain't had someone care so much about my satisfaction in more years than I care to say. She smiled, a weak, sad little smile.
You know, if you didn't have those boys to back you up, I'd have thought you a liar about being a virgin. You gave this old witch a run for her dollar, that's for sure.
See? I asked, snatching up her hands. That's what I mean.
I never thought about sex before all this. Now I only want to please you. I just want to stay here and make you happy. Isn't there anything you can do to keep me here? To keep me whole? It ain't that easy, boy.
You mean as easy as raising the dead? Surely a witch as powerful as you can handle this. Hell, you conquered death, woman. How can this bag of rotting meat be a challenge after that?
Her ego stroked. She smiled a little wider. I don't know if I can. I could feel her confidence bouncing back, so I pushed down a little harder on the compliment accelerator. Come on now, I said, my thumbs tracing little circles on her smooth skin. Surely a woman who shines like the sun when she comes is bound to know a spell that can keep a kid like me from falling apart.
Yanking her hands from mine, the madam shot to her feet. She stared down her nose at me, her eyes fierce with a fiery anger.
What did you just say?
Now there was a line somewhere that I had crossed with my words. I only wished I knew when and where.
Surely you can help me?
Nah, the other part.
What part? I asked.
You know which damn part, boy. I cocked my head at her.
You glow when you come?
Something happened then, something that I would never see happen again. Had I known enough at the time, I would have grabbed a camera. But again, I'm getting ahead of myself. What happened that morning was simple, but more profound than I knew.
Zombie eyes. I Hi everyone, Tony Schaub here to share with you one of my patented gore score reviews from my zombie review book and website, thegorescore.com. Let's begin. I think I was born in the wrong decade. Although I grew up watching the great horror films of the 1980s, I seem to have a special affinity for the groovy, rough and gritty feel of the 1970s horror movies. Maybe I just enjoy cinematic experiences from the times when the writing and the characters had to drive a story, and the special effects were a supporting player. Nowadays, it seems to be the exact opposite, with each new CGI-tacular movie trying to outdo the last. But every so often, a current film will come along that breaks the trend and gives its viewers both a good-looking film and a great story to boot. Throw in a healthy dose of retro feel with an homage to a bygone era of cinema, and you've got the makings of one of the amazing movie-watching experiences, specifically known as Planet Terror. Half of the ambitious two-movie Grindhouse project put together by directors Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez, Tarantino's B-movie slash exploitation homage Death Proof being the other half, Planet Terror is simply a good old-fashioned zombie movie made by people who know how to entertain. Rodriguez has actually said in multiple interviews that he came up for the idea of this movie while filming another movie, The Faculty, all the way back in 1998. In fact, he even told The Faculty stars Elijah Wood and Josh Hartnett that he firmly believed zombie movies were going to, and I quote, come back in a major way, end quote, and he started writing a zombie movie so he could be one of the first to ride the wave. Unfortunately, Rodriguez got caught up doing some other projects and his zombie film fell by the wayside, but when Tarantino approached him about doing Grindhouse in 2005, he knew the time for his zombie movie had finally come. Let's borrow some retro phrases and score this bad mamma jamma. G. General entertainment. Out of sight. The cast is clearly having fun and know how to entertain. There's an eclectic mix of well-known stars like Rose McGowan, Naveen Andrews, Josh Brolin, Marley Shelton, Fergie, and Bruce Willis, who really take the time to chew the scenery and make the most of their parts, and this makes the film feel like equal parts blockbuster and B-movie. The zombie kills are gory and plentiful, and it just seems like everyone involved knew exactly what kind of movie they were making, one to entertain and not worry about winning any awards. And they had no problem executing. Category score, 10 out of 10. O, original content, Marvy. Granted, these are your standard fare zombies, but I like the way the plague is presented. Initial exposure to a top-secret army gas is what turns you into a zombie, but prolonged, regulated exposure to the gas can actually keep you normal, a tactic some of the military men in the movie attempt to use to keep themselves non-zombied. Also, super mega bonus points to a movie that is ballsy enough to amputate its leading lady's leg halfway through the movie and then replace it with a fully functional machine gun. Ah, Cherry darling, we love you. Category score, 8 out of 10. R. Realism. Don't be such a spaz. Surprisingly, I felt that a lot of the reactions and responses of the characters in the movie were pretty realistic. There was such a broad spectrum of the types of characters in the story, and so many of them reacted to what was going on in different ways, but ways that were consistent with their characters' personalities. It definitely added to the realistic feel of the film. This category's high score was the pleasant surprise of the film. Can you dig it? Category score, 8 out of 10. E. Effects and editing. Far out. Lots of great gore and grossness in the film, especially during the scenes that take place in the hospital during the initial phase of the mass outbreak. And the editing of the film takes this category score to the max, especially with the addition of one of the iconic pieces of the 70s B-movies, The Missing Reel. Rodriguez purposefully omitted a key scene in the film and never explained how things in the story went from one condition, relatively calm, to the extreme, house on fire, zombies everywhere, and somehow missing this scene, replete with the kitschy, real missing logo and scratchy 16mm film graphics, actually adds to the overall entertainment value of the film. At least, for me it did. Category score, 10 out of 10. Taking these scores and averaging them, we come up with a total score of 9 out of 10 for Planet Terror, placing the film squarely in the sweet range. I love this movie and highly recommend it to any zombie film lover. You shouldn't be disappointed. Get more reviews about movies, books, games, graphic novels, and all things zombie at thegorescore.com. I'm Tony Schaub, and now, my friends, you know the score.
Remember me? I'm that sick hillbilly bastard that likes to drop zombies down them old manholes. Well, let me tell you about this new idea I got the other day. I'll bet you're gonna split your britches laughing. Now, I wouldn't go advising you to try this at home and all. Leave this stuff to the experts. Who's that, you ask? Well, that'd be my drunk ass. One thing I've learned in this zombie apocalypse is that getting drunk and killing me some zombies is damn fun. Sure, occasionally some dumb fool pisses me off and I have to go and off him too. But hey, no more cops. Last thing you want to do in times like this is pissing off some backwoods boy. Trust me, I ain't just winking for show right there. So, the other day, this feller named Zach asked me, "Hey Bill, don't you ever get tired of dropping zombies down manholes?" By the way, Zach is this new guy I started hanging with. Him and his wife are real nice folk like me. And guess what? They like getting drunk and killing zombies too. For a while there, we'd drop zombies down them old manholes for weeks in a row. Zach used to be a shoe salesman or some shit like that. Who knows? But he got one darn good pair of kicks for each of us. Anyways, before I could answer Zach's question, his wife Amy chimed in like the little songbird she is. "Yeah, there's got to be a better way of killing off these bastards." Amy's a good religious woman, so she don't curse much. I would have chose fuckers over the word bastards any day, but that's what makes her who she is, I reckon. I'd give off her husband and give her a throw if I could, if I thought she'd go for an ugly bastard like me. But as it's Zach, it seems pretty safe. So I sets there and conjured me up an idea. They got bored of dropping them down manhole, huh? They won't be getting tired of this idea anytime soon, I think. I call this one that old bait and switch. "Yeehaw! That sounds like fun," Zach said when I told him what I had twisted around in my head. Then Amy went and said, let's go kill us some zombie fuckers. Guess she ain't so religious after all. But hey, all's fair in love and zombie killing. Maybe if I go and get bored, I'll make a move on Amy after all. Well, it took us a while to find the right places. This one's kind of tricky. We tried to stick to highways, but had the most fun searching them city roads. In the meanwhile, we gassed up the old F-15 and played us a game of zombie baseball. Zombie baseball, you ask? Well, it works about the same as mailbox baseball. And I bet my last dollar most of us have played that one time or another, haven't we? See that? Another wink just for shits and giggles. Good things about zombie baseball is it's gender-friendly. Amy ended up beating my ass by 2 frickin' runs. Not so sure I'd go for her after that. Anyways, we done found this old building on the far side of town. It'd do good for camp until the generator takes a crapper or we go and get sick of it. The city ain't nothing like the backwoods, you know. It's boring. Out back of this joint is one of them fences that says high voltage in bright red lettering. Good thing that fence had a switch on the insides to turn it off and on. I knows this, 'cause I done tested it. No, I ain't all stupid enough to go clinging on to said fence with my bare fucking hands. I tested her with a rat. Deep fried that son of a bitch. After a nice rat dinner, wait, you didn't think I was going to let that bastard go to waste, did you? Rats are good eats. Tell the truth, it's slim pickings nowadays. Beggars can't be chewers. Or some shit like that. Don't tell no one, but hell, I was eating rats long before any apocalypse. There's good meat on them rats. So, with a full belly and a half a case of beer in me, and we got a hunkering for some zombie killing. 'Twas about time we go a-testing my newest idea. So, what I did was dress myself up in gear like some baseball catcher would have done. Not that it would protect me much, but it sure did look wicked enough. Like some sort of superhero. I clanged me a wooden spoon on this pot loud as I could. I stood there bang, bang, banging on that pot till I got me zombies coming. And I ain't gonna lie, when I saw how many were coming, I about shit my pants. Now, I likes to name my zombies before I kill 'em, but there were so many, I was a bit afraid to take the time. Funny thing about beer, though, it gives you muscles you didn't know you done had. So I named 'em Ed, Fred, Frida, Ted, Shemp, and Zed. Yeah, I know. I already used Zed once before. But damn it, I likes me that name. I think there's a Zed in every group. At least till I gets me to say that line I do love so much. Then this big fucker comes around the corner. He's all green and big as a goddamn wrestler. He looked like that Hulk character. So guess what? That's what I was gonna name him. Ain't it funny how all zombies in movies always seem to be weak, white-collared bastards? Well, let me tell yous, they come in all shapes and sizes. But this one done took that there cake. I figured 'twas about time to run, so I take off running. Only it ain't so easy being drunk and wearing those catcher's gears as I thought it would be. What always looked pretty easy on the TV was damn hard in real life. So I hopped, skipped, and jumped, and whatever else I could do to get me to that fence. Behind me were some shuffling, one dragging a broken leg behind him or some shit like that, and some done charged. Hulk led the way with that damn Zed not far behind. I reached that gate and gave her a tug shut. Zack, me, and Amy stood there in that little goddamn fenced-in area till all them zombies got their dead asses close enough. Once they were in range, I done threw me that switch. Woo-hoo-hoo-hee! You should have seen them fuckers cooking. Every damn time they got thrown up by that electricity, they just came back looking for more. They didn't give 2 shits that they were frying their asses. They just wanted them some meat. We sat back and watched those fuckers burn on that fence and drank a whole nother case of beer, laughing our asses off. Now that's the kind of shit that keeps my backwoods ass happy. Hulk took the longest to fry, go figure. But old Zed wasn't too far in front of him. And guess what? I finally get to say me what I've been wanting to say so long. Zed is dead. Now ain't that some shit?
going to do it.
Library of the Living Dead is now proud to present Calvin A. L. Miller II's The Zombies Survival Guide, Thrive in the Zombie Apocalypse After You Turn, by Het Madden, from a zombie's perspective. Artwork that you can't see on the podcast, by Alan R. Gandy. The zombie apocalypse is coming. It's not if, it's when. And if you think you're going to be one of the brave survivors you see in the movies and video games or read about in books and graphic novels, you are sadly mistaken. You know who I mean. The handsome and tough hero who was a Navy SEAL that women love and men want to be. Or the beautiful, big-breasted, brilliant heroine with a PhD in science. You aren't even the wisecracking sidekick who lives to defend the heroes. You are a regular person, an everyman, just as I was before I wrote this book. So face it, the odds are much more in favor of you becoming one of the undead, a ghoul, a dead, a zombie. But don't worry, there is hope. There are ways for you to live a very happy and rewarding life after you turn. How long? Well, that depends. But you might as well enjoy virtual immortality while you can. Sure, it's not as cool as being a vampire. They get the late nights partying, looking like the heroes I mentioned above, the cool clothes, and getting to sleep all day. No, you'll be a staggering, oozing, pus-filled mess. Think of it as having the flu, times a million. But how can you fight healthies armed with weapons that can be anything from a boy with a screwdriver to a soldier with an automatic rifle? And what about fire, armored vehicles, and explosives? You will not only have physical limitations, but you will also be stupid, right? Wrong. Many zombies retain much of their intelligence after they turn, and many find ways to gain even more, as I did. The ones that are out in the open and shuffling towards people who have guns or other weapons are the dumb ones, the ones that weren't prepared. The smart ones know what to do. They go unnoticed. They wait for their chance to attack. They plot. But if the zombie apocalypse is coming and hasn't happened yet, how do I know all of this? Because it has already started. It just hasn't reached you yet. Or maybe you're not aware. The mind can play tricks. And because I'm Hetfield Madden, and I'm a zombie. The undead, and what you will become. So you don't want to die. Nobody really does. But it's been a big part of life since the earth cooled, and during a zombie apocalypse, it's even bigger. Or smaller, in some ways. Deads. This is my word for zombie, a word I find insulting, but I will use it in this guide when necessary. Will outnumber you, if they already don't, and you will get bitten, die, and turn. You will reanimate and get up and walk. You will remember things. How much, who knows, but you will be undead. Not dead, but not alive. Now, the verdict is still out on whether you turn simply by dying and not just being bitten by a dead. I believe you do, because I've seen deads that are completely unmarked, no bites, no nothing, walking around. Could they have been infected some other way? Blood transfusion or food, maybe? And then died and come back? Perhaps, but I doubt it. Many theories exist, including that the disease is airborne, but only infects the subjects after death, or the airborne virus infects you while you're alive, but doesn't kill you. It waits until you die to reanimate you. No matter. You die. You come back. It doesn't get any simpler. Even slow deads will turn you. One bites one, who bites another, and so on. Being newly undead, you're going to need to know how to survive. Some of you reading this book may already be a dead. You may or may not realize it yet. This is one of the problems with being undead. Realization is cloudy, and perception is usually skewed. You may even think your life is the same as it's always been. The mind of the recently deceased plays tricks and memories and dreams cloud reality. Soon enough, the real world will seep in and replace any delusions that you are still living your normal life. If you want to know the truth, take your temperature, if you're able. If you're undead, it will be the same as the room temperature, roughly. Feeling for a pulse or heartbeat is misleading, as the heart is a muscle, and in many cases still beats, although the blood it pumps is as dead as the dead whose chest it beats in. I know you've probably read that the hearts of the undead do not beat, but I assure you this is not true. As long as the heart is safely tucked away inside the chest, it will function as well as, if not better than, a healthy's. Both voluntary and involuntary muscles continue to function, whether needed or not. In any event, please continue reading. It will get easier the more you read. The information in this guide is invaluable and will help you remain alive to fight the healthies. This is a word used for the uninfected population who don't give a damn about you and want you eliminated. And make them pay. Well, there it is, I guess, my ulterior motive. An educated dead is a strong ally. The healthies are responsible for the wrath virus that caused all this. More on the wrath virus in later, slightly uncomfortable chapters. And what do we get in return? Shot at, herded into internment camps, and studied. Like animals. I was in an infected containment center and have the forehead brand to prove it. Once it all started to hit the fan, the government wasted no time in herding us away and trying to protect the innocent. Well, I, for one, know that there are no innocents anywhere. We are experimented on, tortured, and cut up like cattle to see both how the infection spreads and the best way to kill it, and the best way to kill us. So read this book, commit it to memory, and take it to the healthies. If your undead comrades aren't able to do what's in the guide, help them to learn. There are numerous guides that show healthies how to survive us, how to eliminate our plague on them, what weapons to use to kill us, and the best and easiest way to do it, as if we were animals. This guide is for us, and shows us how to survive, thrive, and eliminate them. Stay tuned next episode, good librarian, for more of The Zombie Survival Guide by Calvin A. L. Miller II. Purchase your copy today. Thank you.
that's it, good librarians, for episode number 119 of Library of the Living Dead. I hoped you enjoyed the show. Stay tuned next episode for Chapter 2, Part 2 of Tonya Brown's Lucky Stiff, Chapter 7 of Jake Bible's Dead Mech. We'll have a lot more Done in Ones, and of course, a lot of zombie songs. So, as we do on most of the episodes, we're gonna go out with a song.
Well, the story goes down to Tennessee. The hottest rocker in the band that you ever did see. Crazy scene. Well, I knew these cats when they were alive. I tried to be the band child that ain't jive. Hate to see them live this way. Yeah, this is what I'm gonna say. Rock the rules on me. Rock the rules on me. Rock the rules.